yet they often don't have much knowledge about cooperative work.
Cooperative principles to encourage a cooperative philosophy.
It's actually credit unions that were central to that system.
Different expressions of solidarity.
The question that we should ask ourselves first is, well, you know,
environmentally oriented.
What is the aim of the co-op?
100% what a cooperative
co-op
is.
Needs to serve its members.
Multi-stakeholder cooperatives of some sort.
Keep your interest in what a cooperative is.
I was a working member at a cooperative.
I got into co-ops as a student.
History and heritage of educating kids as young as 6, 7, 8 years old about the cooperative
but
business
can
model.
Be part of a cooperative.
Movement all over the world.
Interesting topics on cooperative.
We live in a society that is very obsessed with the idea of innovation.
Platform co-ops or technology cooperatives.
And we implicitly frame innovation and entrepreneurship as
specifically cooperative development.
One person starting something new. But there are a lot of opportunities for innovation.
Cooperative conversion
by having many people take over something.
You're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Hosted on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We respectfully acknowledge that we work and live on the ancestral and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. For the next hour, you'll be hearing a special edition of our show, dedicated to showcasing highlights from the CASC, ACE, and ICA conference, held last May in La Belle Provence, Montreal. I was given the amazing opportunity to attend the conference thanks to a combination of sponsorships from these three organizations, as well as the Ian McPherson Foundation and the Ralph K. Morris Foundation. So, a huge thanks goes to everyone who made this happen. The theme for the conference this year was cooperative entrepreneurship. In this episode, I'll be showcasing some highlights from the first day of the conference, Youth Day, including some of the people I talked to, and some presentations delving into youth engagement, branding, and insights into how values play a role in co-op advertising. The official CAS conference was 3 days, but the unofficial first day of the conference was Youth Day, and free for anyone to attend. This was to encourage more participation from all the youngsters in the sector. It might be worth reminding here that youth, as defined by the co-op sector, is anyone under the age of 35. So that alone probably gives you a pretty good idea of the direness of the situation. As someone who is a youth, it was pretty nice to see that there was a significant portion of the audience who fit my demographic, which is not something that happens often at all. At this point, I almost expect to be the only one of my age at any co-op event, which is something probably worth trying to change. Things like Youth Day are a good start. The day opened with an intro from Denik Dorval, a member of CASC's youth committee.
Committee for the organization of the conference. And so today, let's just say that we value the importance of youth in the co-op movement.
He welcomed us with presentations from various groups and parts of the country. There were presentations from Quebec, organizations who help youth get involved in the co-op sector from primary and high school, people whose daily work involves getting kids as young as 8 thinking about the co-op model as a viable one. I got to meet those thinking about and doing research into succession planning, specifically the hundreds of thousands of businesses owned by baby boomers that are about to shut down because they have no succession plans, and how co-ops can help alleviate this tragedy. This ended up being a major theme for the conference. I'll get into that topic more in a later episode, though, since it really merits its own. For now, here's some of the interesting people I got to meet on the very first day, introducing themselves as part of an icebreaker activity Denik had us
sure.
do.
Great. So my name is Alex Stone, and I'm with Cooperation Works, which is the national network of co-op developers in the States. We don't explicitly work with youth, but we do cooperative development trainings, namely the art and science of cooperative development, which is a 3-part training. So that actually, we have a really wide span of people taking it. Some of them are quite young, but also like last year, I think we had someone who's like in her 60s, right? So it's not specifically geared toward the youth. I guess it is still close to my heart, though, in that I got into co-ops as a student living in housing co-ops, and that was kind of my bridge into this. And then I also had helped to start the Cooperative Food Empowerment Directive, which is down in the States. Originally was taking kind of that food co-op model, saying, hey, we'll train students on campuses all over to start food co-ops. And they've recently changed their mission, geared toward like much more into the food justice, like making sure there's food access in like POC and like marginalized communities. So it's switched a little bit recently, but so I have a lot of background in it, but right now it's kind of more all over the board.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Eric. I'm co-op Velocity. It's in Manitoba, central Canada. If you're not from Canada, it's middle of Canada. It's a bike co-op, so people or members, they can learn how to fix their own bicycle in the shop. Well, there are a lot of young people that come to our co-op because freedom thing, they want to ride their bike.
Can't afford a car.
Fix it.
Can't afford a car, yeah. Don't want to get a driver's license. The challenge is bridging the gap between, oh, this is a bike shop. This is so cool. I'm coming to fix my bike. What's that co-op word in the title? Cool, I can fix my bike. See you later. So going from that to showing them, okay, why is this co-op? How is this working? Getting them to learn how to fix their bike, but then becoming a volunteer to help others fix their bike, and the chain continues.
No pun intended.
Yeah, so that's the challenge, but...
Okay. My name is Colombia Perez, and I came from the cooperative.
What you're hearing right now is Denik interrupting the introductions to advance us to the second question, which was asking us what we think are good strategies for reaching out and involving more youth in the co-op sector. A pretty big question. Before we got to that, though, we just continued our introductions, going against his instructions. Sorry, Denik.
I work with two young people because I work at the university with the young people from 18 to 25 years, more or less. And all of them in every program, academic program, receive courses about social and solidarity economy. So they are lawyers that study solidarity, social and solidarity economy, economists, and business administration, so veterinarians. So they have the opportunity to learn about the movement, so all over the world, and some of them participate and experience about creating ideas, new ideas, or social innovation for organizations. So that is the way that I think that we could engage young people in this movement, doing, not learning a concept that we used to do. So nowadays, entrepreneurship and social innovation, I think that is the way.
Short introduction for myself. My name is Santa Borning and I'm from Germany. I'm a PhD student and I'm working on values, societal values and cooperatives. And I'm not really working with younger children or more with students. More than with students. And what I see is that they didn't know what a cooperative is. When I ask them in the first lecture, what is a cooperative? They look at me and they say, I have no idea. So I tell them a bit and they realize that it's a really good thing and they really get interested. And we have many finals, so master thesis and bachelor thesis, and they are writing about cooperative topics. And some of them are get published. And that's what we do in our institute.
Okay.
My name is Gregor. I'm from Vienna, and I think my background is pretty much the same as for Senta. I'm also a researcher at an institute that researches on cooperatives and corporations. I'm not really working with very young kids, so to say, not with like with children, but rather with students at university. I also set up a blog recently where I hope that our students sometimes read in a little bit. So I have I try to find a more innovative way, so to say, to present to our students interesting topics on cooperatives. Mm-hmm. Yes, so I hope that they're reading it. I hope that also some of the older generation, so to say, read into it a little bit, and I try to use this the internet and the medium of the internet and all the possibilities that are connected to it to have the youth engaged with the topics on cooperatives.
My name is Kevin. I work for the Canadian Credit Union Association. I guess indirectly.
Okay, guys, I'm going to stop you here.
There we go.
End of the sentence.
I guess indirectly. Maybe find a person that can share the ideas or the main ideas.
I've got an idea. I'll just say my ideas.
Perfect. And then I'm going to pass them the microphone, and they're going to share their ideas to the whole person.
Yeah. I mean, you could also say that.
We could use your idea as well.
We have many, many ideas, but we'll only share one. To increase youth engagement globally, I think possibly an easy way to, or not easy, sorry, way too, sorry, maybe a efficient way or way to get scale quickly would be to support the development of platform co-ops or technology cooperatives that are sort of can operate globally. There's a couple, EVA in Montreal, for example, or Resonate Co-op in Germany. If people are using it in their mobile phones and their apps, and it's just as convenient as anything else, but then they get a notification every year to vote for board of directors, that might sort of pique their interest in what a cooperative is. And the more broadly those apps are used, the more understanding there will be for co-ops. Awesome.
One of those people you heard introduce themselves earlier, Senta Brojnik, was actually one of the presenters of the day, and I got the chance to chat with her in more detail about the research she was conducting into cooperative values in Germany, specifically the discrepancy between what values co-ops have and public perception of them.
My name is Senta Brojnik, and I'm coming from Stuttgart. Stuttgart is a bigger city in the southern part of Germany. And I'm going to the University of Hohenheim, and I'm there a PhD student at the Research Center of Cooperatives.
You've come a long way.
Yeah, that's right. It was a really long way, but the flight was really nice. I started from Frankfurt, so it was just for 8 hours, so it was okay.
Only 8 hours.
Only 8 hours. Yes.
Cool. Why don't you tell me a bit more about your background? What led you to do research in cooperatives?
As I already mentioned, I'm a PhD student, and I studied at the University of Hohenheim before in my master, the agribusiness, and my bachelor, the agriculture. So I have an agrarian background, and now it is compared with the economic part. And my master thesis was about the future viability of purchasing and sales cooperatives. Okay. And there I felt a bit in love with the cooperatives. Mm-hmm. I like the system, how they act with their members, and what they're doing for the society. So I decided to write my PhD on this topic. And then there was a project with a bank, and they want to know what values are important for cooperatives. Mm-hmm. So then I had my topic, and now I'm working on it.
Cool. Cool. And that was actually the topic that you presented on today.
Yes, that's right. That's right. The first research question was to find out which values the German society has. So what do they think about their own values? And the second question was then what they think about the values in cooperative. And then I compared it with each other, and there are many differences between genders or generations, also between East and West Germanies. There are some difference in the mean values.
Interesting. And what was the most surprising result that you got, a more interesting one?
Good question. I think for me it was really interesting that the traditionalists, so the oldest people in Germany, knows totally, I mean 100% what a cooperative is, and they knows really much about the values. And when you're going to the younger generations, so maybe Generation Z and Generation Y, they didn't know too much about cooperatives, and they are not knowing many things about their values. So they can't say, okay, democracy is a really important value for the cooperatives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. From the view of the society, it is clearly that it is liberty.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you say freedom or liberty. It was a really big decision for me, also in my paper, because...
Were these in German?
Freiheit.
Oh, okay.
Freiheit. So it's more freedom,
yeah, right.
But they also told me, yeah, you should say liberty because it depends everything, and not just freedom is just, yeah, more focused.
Mm, interesting.
This is what they told me, but this is why I choose liberty. And from the view of the society to the cooperatives, liberty is the lowest value on the rank.
The lowest, right?
Yeah. Okay. So the difference between the view of the society and the view of the society to the cooperative is here the biggest.
Mm.
And solidarity is kind of the same. They feel it kind of the same.
Interesting.
Yes. But I mean, solidarity is also a really important value for the cooperatives.
Yeah, and I mean, that was something that was surprising to me, is that the lowest sort of values for cooperatives were predictability, sustainability, tolerance, and liberty.
Yeah.
Because at least in BC, where I'm from and where I operate, sustainability is something that people mention all the time. They're like,
yes,
co-ops, more sustainable, they
yeah.
last longer. And liberty, tolerance, especially because like people always talk about how co-ops are very diverse and they're very tolerant of different backgrounds and all that. So it was really interesting to see that these were at the very, very bottom of...
Yeah. For me, it is also interesting because, for example, sustainability, I mean, you can see it everywhere in Germany. Mm-hmm. Sustainability is a really big value here in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also interesting that the society do not feel it is like such important as they communicate it. So yeah, this is also interesting for the co-ops, that they have to decide what they do with the ranks, what I build it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, when they have sustainability, they should root it and they should focus on it and they should communicate it. But when they just think, okay, they should interpretate the value liberty more, they can do it, but it just be okay with their mission statement and their what they are focusing. So it is also depending on the sector what the cooperatives are doing.
Yeah. And so more generally in Germany, is there a strong cooperative sector?
Yeah, I would say yes. We have 7,320 cooperatives in Germany, and we have every third person in Germany is a member of a value. And this is in comparison to the other legal form, not the same. I mean, and it's also, of course, possible to be a member in more than one cooperative.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so the results that you got in terms of the values that people have, is this, do you think this is a problem in the co-op sector communicating that they have those values more generally?
I think yes, because they have these values since ever. I mean, the founding father built them up and they're really deeply rooted and they do not communicate it. And what I found out is that people put much weight on the values. I mean, it can handle many things when you use values. Mm-hmm. And I think they communicated too less, yes.
So what do these results lead to? What are you going to be doing with this?
I told you that there was it was the idea of the big bank, or it was a union from banks, and they are working still now with my values, mm-hmm. and they make a marketing mm-hmm. thing. So the target is to motivate the younger generation to the values and to the cooperatives, so that you acquire more members from the younger generations and put them to the cooperatives. And this is what I hope, what is going forwards, and that the cooperatives get a higher position in Germany. So, because maybe I ask somebody and he has totally no idea what I'm talking about because he didn't know the legal form, and then I explain it and I talk about the banks or the credit forms, and then they say, ah, of course, I understand, but it's not in their minds. So my aim is also to put cooperative in the mind of German society.
Yeah. And is this sort of where you see yourself heading in the future? More research about co-ops, or do you plan to get more involved in some sort of industry yourself?
There's a really big cooperative association close to my place where I'm living, mm-hmm. and I really hope that I can find there a job. And I totally want to be staying in the co-op sector because I'm totally standing behind this project, or I mean this concept,
yeah.
And I want to stay in the cooperative topic.
Cool.
And I think it's the best way for a democratic legal form. So when you want to say something and when you want to be part of it, you should definitely go in a co-op.
Cool.
Yes,
I will.
Perfect.
Thanks again. And
thank you so much.
The conference.
Thanks.
After many more presentations, we headed to a bar for the opening cocktail. Co-op Catacombs is not the kind of bar you'd expect a group of co-op academics to let loose in, but it actually seemed perfect for that occasion. If you've ever been in an anarchist or punk bar, you'll know exactly what it was like. But for those who haven't experienced that pleasure in life, all you need to know is that it's the kind of place where you can overhear people talking about Marxism without it being treated like a bad word, the kind of venue where on Thursdays and Fridays there's punk and metal tributes, whereas on Mondays there's improv shows, and Wednesdays there's swing dance classes. These are all real, by the way, I checked them on their website. Definitely a place I want to visit again when I get a chance to, and a highlight of the conference for me. The next day was more presentations, and I found another person doing research into the topic of co-op values. Valérie Michaud, whose work delved into the intersection of co-op identity and values-based branding. Using a case study of the controversy surrounding a BC-based cooperative we all have at least heard of, Mountain Equipment Co-op. You'll hear more about this from her.
Years ago, and he came to me and said, well, is there any interest in looking for controversial stuff on social media within the social economy? So we looked on social media, and we actually found some two interesting cases within the same organization. Just raise your hand. Do you know Mountain Equipment Co-op?
I'm Valérie Michaud. I'm associate professor at GUCAM here in Montreal. I'm in social and collective enterprise management team, and I've been interested in co-ops for quite a while, actually. I did my master's a long time ago on women's participation in fair trade co-ops in Costa Rica, and then went on to the labor market in nonprofit organizations, and then decided to go back to school to do a PhD in administration so that I could teach future managers that there are other types of formal organizations than for-profit, and also to help people working in those alternative organizations, such as co-ops, to build management tools that could better reflect their values and how what they think business should be all about.
That's super interesting. I'm very curious about your first paper, your master's thesis now. How did you decide to do that? Like, how did you get into that topic?
Oh, that was back in 2000. So wow. It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I come from a business school, and I never heard of fair trade while I was doing my bachelor's degree at the U of O, University of Ottawa. And then at some point, it just, you know, kind of was a wonderful discovery that there was, but I was also very concerned with different elements in society and environment. And when I discovered back at the end of the 90s, fair trade, which was really emerging, I thought, well, this is wonderful. I feel like I could do something there. And as I was looking at this course of fair trade, I realized how it was about fairness and equity, but in North, South, but not within those organizations, asking what is the share, what's the participation of women within those organizations that were developing. So that was my critical point of entry into the world of fair trade co-ops in Costa Rica. And and then afterwards, another phenomenon that was interesting here in Quebec was the multi-stakeholder co-ops developing. So that's what I studied for my master's, and looking really at the different paradoxes and contradictions and tensions that all alternative organizations face, and how management tools can mediate those tensions by either, you know, pushing the organization in one direction or the other.
Yeah, and paradoxes are something that you actually mentioned in your talk today, which I found really interesting, how a co-op is almost inherently paradoxical in the way that it wants to present itself, its identity and its values and what it wants to give to its members, but especially so for bigger co-ops that are trying to make themselves present more internationally, maybe, or viable on a larger market. Maybe you can talk more about that and where your specific research took you.
Yes, well, I've in the past, I've studied smaller organizations, but with my colleague Marcos Barros, we wanted to look at the social media and to see whether social media spaces were used by co-ops and social economy organizations in order to generate debates and discuss with the population. And at the time we were looking on social media, we came across the Mountain Equipment Co-op's controversies. The first one was back in 2011, 2012, with regards to governance changes, a resolution that was passed by the board, limiting the possibility for, you know, people from the assembly to, you know, just run for the election. It imposed a screening process. And the second step afterwards was to actually identify those who were running to be elected that were formally recommended by the board. So that led us to a critical analysis of how co-ops were controlling the spaces of contention and debates, and how, you know, social media was one way for members to find a space in order to debate, especially in those big co-ops where the link between the members is not that obvious to sustain. If I'm a member at MEC, I don't know if you're a member at MEC. I can guess, but I can only guess. And we don't have spaces where we actually physically meet unless I'm running those, you know, doing all the activities. But and there's also the issue of online sales that kind of disperses the membership all across the country. Mm-hmm. So in those cases, we feel like there's a need for co-op leadership to really put up some spaces where members can actually, you know, discuss and participate and and debate different orientations that the board may want to take.
Mm. So you think there should be some sort of like online open forum for members to be able to state their case and their needs, and that the board and the management should actually invest their time and resources into something like that?
Well, we think that could be something to look up, of course, because if they don't do it, then the members will do it on their side, and it might be more critical. And, you know, it was interesting in the first, the case on governance changes, there were some issues with censorship. From the part of MEC. So I think that, you know, you'd rather be there and construct the dialogue than, you know, kind of control some specific channels where everything seems to be okay, but all of the dirty stuff is being discussed behind. So I think you need to open up, and I think that co-ops are, you know, should lead the way. Different organizations that are not co-ops are much more conversational than MEC can be. And it shouldn't be about trying to sell us material stuff. Mm-hmm. It should also be about debating what the co-op is and what the members want.
And the sort of thesis that you presented today was to do very much with visual identity, branding, logos, which was another big controversy that MEC more recently was, well, not super recently, but 2013 or so, right? Where they changed their mountainside and the mountain equipment co-op into just MEC, green background, simple text. And you did some analysis on that and how people reacted, and could you just talk a little bit about that, maybe?
Yes. Well, actually, what we observed was really how, in the first place, the discourse, the MEC discourse, was really about this is a move in order to better reflect our opening to new markets. I'm kind of translating this, but basically, this was all about, you know, reaching out to more people and saying our mission is to inspire more active living. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing it. And we're going to, you know, mainstream ourselves in order to talk to those people who couldn't, who don't feel like they belong to something with a mountain. But what the question that we should ask ourselves first is, well, you know, what is the aim of the co-op? The co-op needs to serve its members. And members kept saying, well, we don't want yoga pants. We don't want bikes at MEC. We want, you know, the good old stuff.
Mountain equipment.
Exactly. So in changing the logo, the visual aspect of the logo made it clear, you know, members had been feeling the changes going, you know, going to their shops, and they could feel that something was changing. But the logo really kind of bluntly said, you know, here's what we aim to be, or what the direction we're heading to. So it that's probably why it was such a radical change. And in the branding literature, there's also, you know, kind of be very careful if you're changing into a, you know, very different direction. So it seems like, yeah, it was a highly risk change. And that's what caused so much emotional discourse from the members, who felt like they were being betrayed, because, you know, it's okay if you're now selling yoga pants if you keep the stuff that you were selling. But then if my jacket now bears this logo to which I have no, you know,
emotional connection to.
Exactly. It's doesn't you're betraying our identity. So it was an it's an interesting case in this case, but it's the so the move was really members. The second narrative was really about members. You know, while MEC officials were kind of obfuscating the nexus between identity and strategy with regards to the logo, the members actually said, no, no, what are you doing there? You are, you know, indeed threatening our identity, and we don't want to go that way. And then the third step, which I think is really interesting, because in other organizations you wouldn't see that, but they actually said, well, they didn't say we're going to boycott. They said we're going to go back to the spaces where we can actually debate this, and we realize and we are sorry we weren't present in past assemblies, but we will make sure we will vote. And actually some quotes are actually very, we'll vote those clowns out. And we have, you know, plenty of quotes in this work, really expressing deep concern with the mainstreaming strategy.
And that was 5 years ago, right? Did MEC issue any official press releases about the change or make any apologies or anything like that?
No, the discourse has remained mainly at the beginning was really like, you know, it's our new identity, new image, we're changing, but our values don't change. But when you dig into what they're talking about in terms of values, they keep referring to the quality of the products, which is not something that's being threatened in any way by the logo. The values members refer to is more about democracy and, you know, participation and, you know. So, and then at one point, we see a tipping point where MEC is saying, oh, we're surprised. How impressive is the reaction? And that's kind of funny because, you know, nobody would, I think no organization should be surprised when you're going from like an iconic logo that was loved by, you know, lots of people to this box. But they, especially at one point we see that, you know, there's a change in like, okay, we're actually integrating those critics, but they kept saying, they kept the line that, you know, MEC was not changing.
I would be very curious to know whether in these past years there's been any actual changes in the governance style, if those people who said they'd go out there and vote and vote out the clowns, if any of that actually happened, or if it's sort of a lost cause. I mean, I've heard of other co-ops doing that sort of thing, right? Like Van City Credit Union is a pretty good example of sort of being led astray by other values and intentions for a while, and then these people, these very leftist people, sort of infiltrated it in a way and gained seats on the board and just completely shifted it back into its co-op roots, which it is how it, I've heard at least it is now. Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of anything like that happening at MEC so far.
Well, if you were reading the lines and between the lines of the candidates running for elections year after year, then you can identify, you can follow some people, candidates who are running year after year. So they pass the filtering process, and in their presentation they actually say that they're against the recent directions. Of course those people are not identified as recommended by the board, but I think that, you know, I've followed a few of them and seen that the vote are increasing. So there might be at some point a success for them being elected at one point, but most people actually don't know about, and it all comes down to education of the members. Lots of people don't realize that there are members of the co-op and that, you know, as such they have a say and it's a one member, one vote. So the participation at AGM is very low. So it's hard to convince people to go against the recommendations of the board, and you know, even before that, to actually vote and get informed.
Yeah. So personally, do you think that at this stage that MEC is at, where, you know, very low voter turnout, most of the co-op values have sort of been shifted to the side, is it even worth trying to maintain that type of co-op identity anymore, or is it sort of, would it be more profitable, I guess, if they just sort of let that go, that like let that model go completely?
I'm not sure, because I'm interested in looking at what's happening right now. Mm. They opened a store which was a different urban store on Saint-Denis Street here in Montreal a few years ago, and it just closed. Huh. So I'm thinking maybe the you know profitability of the new strategy isn't that much there. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I don't know what happened exactly, but I'd be curious to follow up on those urban shops that they opened where there's it's mainly travel and yoga pants and things like that. Mm. I think it would be it will be interesting to follow up on this, and there's also a new CEO coming in this summer, so we'll see how that might either follow the trends or shift into another direction.
Cool. And just to finish this off, I'm curious about where you're heading next. Where are you sending off this research somewhere? Is there a purpose for it?
Yes, we're well, actually, at the moment, we're just trying to see where in which conversation it belongs to. That's also always the challenge as a co-op scholar, to be talking to scholars in the co-op field, but also in to also mainstream academia in order to get them to be interested in co-ops as well. So at the moment, we are still debating on the direction, but it will probably be about identity and performance paradoxes of co-ops and the role that artifacts can play to mediate those tensions.
That's very cool. Well, thanks so much for talking to me.
Thanks for the invitation.
And thus, my days at the conference flew by, presentation after presentation, each person being more and more interesting than the other, all working on super innovative stuff, things which I will continue to share in later episodes. I'll end this one, though, with some snippets from the night of the banquet, where everyone got to dress in their finest clothes and drink fine wine while an award ceremony was taking place. And, as you can hear right now, there was even a live jazz band, setting the mood for the night. Emotions ranged from poignant, such as during the touching tribute to the late Dr. Jack Corder by Dr. Marcelo Vieira.
I'm humbled to have been asked to say a few words about an indefatigable friend and mentor to many of us here, Professor Jack Corder. As Jack would have wanted it, we remember his life, a life well lived, not in solemnity, but in joy. Professor Jack Corder, my colleague at the University of Toronto's Adult Education and Community Development Program in the Department of Leadership, Higher Adult Education at OISE U of T, Boston, passed away in the early hours of February 6th after a short and relatively peaceful struggle with terminal illness. Surrounded during his last few months by his friends and family, and continuing to teach and research until the end. Jack was a researcher and educational giant among us and was a part of many of our lives. So to test this theory, I'd like to do an exercise we did when Jack won the ANSWER Lifetime Achievement Award in 2015. It'll require your involvement. Please stand if you have co-authored with Jack Corder.
Only about two or three people stand up.
Oh, come on.
Yes. Anybody else? So please stand if you have researched with Jack.
A couple more people stand up.
So please stand if you were in a collected edition or journal with Jack.
A few more.
So stand if you were a student of Jack's in any capacity. No, stay standing. Everybody stay standing. No, stay standing. So whether you took a course with Jack, whether he supervised you. So stand if you were ever at a conference with Jack.
Dozens of people stand up.
All right, that's more like it, yes.
Everyone who's been at
Jack. Yes, stand if you were on a board with Jack.
A couple more.
Stand if you have read any of Jack's work.
More than half the room is standing up at this point.
So Jack, so stand if you've ever heard of Jack Porter.
Literally every single person in the room stands up.
So Jack taught at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education of the University.
And so we go from that to more lighthearted stuff, such as the Merit Award given to Dr. John Justin McMurtry by Dr. Daryl Reed. Lots of doctors at this event for some reason.
It's sort of odd, but let me see if you can guess. Now, which cast member do you know that regularly comes to the cast conference with their mother? Any guesses? Any other guesses?
No.
Somebody who actually presents with their mother. Somebody who's getting rather red in the face. This year's winner of the cast award is J.J. McMurtry.
Got to talking to a pretty international group at my table. For all our Spanish, Basque, German, and Austrian-German speakers out there, this one's for you.
I say the same in Basque. Mi eskerdanagatik eta bihar arte.
Un excelente evento. Fuimos felices y aprendimos mucho.
Comimos perfecto. Wir hatten eine sehr, sehr gute Zeit hier in Montreal in der Konferenz.
Bei der Konferenz.
Bei der Konferenz.
Okay, again. Okay. Wir hatten eine wunderschöne Zeit hier bei der Konferenz in Montreal.
In Montreal. Vielen Dank dafür.
Dankeschön.
Es hat Spaß gemacht.
Ja.
And because I would be remiss not to take this opportunity, Pandeiret shumë kask ACE edhe ICA për konferencën e mahnitshme, ju më knaqë shumë edhe du gjithë qysh me ardha 5 vitin tjetër. That was some Albanian for ya. And just so all of you Anglophones out there don't feel left out, thank you for the amazing conference, kask, ACE, and ICA. I had a wonderful time, and I can't wait to come again. This is where I'll leave you all this time. I hope you enjoyed this special co-op conference edition of Eat for All, the Cooperative Connection. And we'll join you again next week on Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM. Make sure to let us know what you think on Twitter at Eat for All. And if you have any show ideas or thoughts, feel free to throw them at us at ideas@eatforall.coop. That's ideas@eatforall.coop. And last but not least, you can listen to all our previous shows online at eatforall.coop in a more condensed podcast version. My name is Vesta, and I wish you a cooperative week.